This is the sound of football.
On this week's Sound of Football, we look back on a trio of classic European matches, including the big one, Man United taking on Arsenal at Old Trafford, Das Große, Bayern Munich and Wolfsburg in battle at the Allianz Arena, and Quello Grande, the Milan derby which all went pear-shaped for Leonardo and his men. All that and more on a two-thirds strength version of the Sound of Football. Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Sound of Football. My name's Chris Oakley, and this week I'm here with Terry DeFellin to look back primarily on a Saturday full of top quality football right across Europe. Now, before we go on, it's worth pointing out that Graham is not with us this week following his inability to spot two of the four goals scored in last week's Aston Villa v Liverpool match. We thought it only fair to banish him to a part of the world where football hasn't yet impacted on civilization. He's in Cornwall this week. Anyway, Terry, welcome aboard.
Hello.
Now, last Saturday was the night of the big ones, as we publicised it on our Some People on the Pitch TV preview. A triple bill of fabulous football, which began with the match between Man United and Arsenal. I know you, like myself, had Arsenal to win that one. Do you think United were unlucky to lose that, or could they have done? Do you think Arsenal could have done more to win?
Well, I did watch the game on the other side, which we are going to talk about. So I caught the highlights of this programme, which of course are very difficult to gauge highlights. Even nice, well balanced highlights like on the BBC's Match of the Day.
Indeed.
But it did seem that it did look like Arsenal had done enough to get something from that game. And indeed, I did catch snippets of it because the other game I was watching was sort of slightly different kickoff time, so I was able to catch a little bit of it. And certainly in the early part of the second half, it looked as though Arsenal had United's number and were the better side. And in fact, that save from Foster from Van Persie at 1-0 was a superb save, and I think that would have been. That would have been game over had the had that gone in.
Quite.
But it
indeed,
wasn't. Yeah. And so, I mean, these things are difficult to call. I mean, I know that Arsene is complaining about foul play.
He is.
And I suppose he's, but I mean, everybody does that. I mean, you do get games like this, big contested game. It's a derby game. It's certainly a big, big rivalry between these two clubs, especially so early in the season when it's all to play for. It's going to be a tough one, and guys like Fletcher will keep on going. I choose not to form an opinion as to whether or not I felt they were excessive, because I don't really know. I mean, I don't know what excessive is. What do you think?
I can kind of sympathise with Arsene Wenger on it. There is that element of, like, we've just been done by UEFA because of Eduardo, so therefore, I've kind of got carte blanche to kind of have a bit of a moan about it. But, there was quite a few fouls. The thing I particularly feel is that Rooney's the penalty, the dive or not dive that led to the penalty, I am inclined to go with those people that say that Rooney did dive, because as some people have already pointed out, that his legs were sort of crumbling by the time Almunia came rushing out. And yes, there was contact, but he was already kind of crumbling before contact was made.
He did appear to be heading for the dirt, didn't he, before... The legs. I mean, he may be in anticipation of being fouled.
Exactly.
And therefore, such are the fine lines between diving as cheating and diving as, well, he's about to foul me, so I better get my proper health and safety, full sorted out, so I don't damage myself as I get tripped up. Which
And all that is, of course, with the benefit of having seen a replay. So and when you do see it for the first time at proper speed, it does look for all the world like a penalty. I'm not going to kind of say the referee kind of wrongly gave that one, but it's just, I suppose, putting myself in Arsene Wenger's shoes, you sort of think, I got done. But as you say, it was all kind of it will be in a split second, it was a bit more predetermined on the part of Eduardo than it was on Rooney.
Do you think Arsenal are being singled out here, Chris? I mean, I think back to the Champions League match last season, was it, when Ryan Babel played? They played Liverpool, and Ryan Babel pretty deliberately dived and yes. won a penalty, and it was evidently quite clearly a dive. And there didn't seem to be a great deal of brouhaha about that at the time, and this seems a bit strange that it should be Arsenal. I mean, do you think that Wenger's got a case that perhaps, there is a bit of a sort of, I don't know, the powers that be have got it in for Arsenal, or do you think that he's just being belligerent?
I just think he's going through a bad patch, bless him. I'm a bit of a fatalist on this. I always sort of think that these things always kind of balance themselves out in the end, really, and whether it's Wenger or Ferguson, they tend to kind of forget the points in time when things go in their favour. So I just think it's just, at the risk of sort of generalising a bit, perhaps he's just going through a sort of spell where the key decisions are kind of going against him. It'll all come right. I'm sure it will do at some point, and I don't suppose we'll hear much from Wenger when it does.
I don't suppose they do. I mean, I think the whole Eduardo thing has got more to do with the Scottish FA than it has to do with Eduardo, doesn't it, really, or Arsenal specifically. It's more to do with the SFA's indignance at basically having only one representative in Europe at the moment, and the UEFA coefficients coming up for review soon, and Scotland are in danger of losing a Champions League spot. So you wonder whether or not perhaps the reason behind the whole Eduardo brouhaha is more high politics on behalf of the SFA and their connections in UEFA than it is an actual dislike or desire to, you know, see diving and cheating eradicated from the sport.
Quite. And I mean, although it's generally kind of agreed at the moment that Scottish football is kind of going through a particularly kind of weak phase, and which I think is reflected in the amount of sort of teams they've got now, sort of getting into the latter stages of, or the important stages, shall we say, of European competition. Yes. But perhaps we'll save that one for another time.
Yes, I think that's a discussion for another time. Yes, you're right. Well, I guess the verdict of the game was that, I mean, it could have gone either way, but it went with the home side, as is often the case in games that could have gone either way.
Yeah, and I mean, just to kind of completely sort of summarise, I think, having seen the game, that Arsenal were pretty comfortable first half. The defence was dealing with everything that was thrown at them pretty comfortably. Got their goal 5 minutes before half-time, really well-taken goal by Arshavin. And it was just, I think, Fergie must have given them a stern talking to, shall we say, at half-time, and got them a bit more organised. I think Giggs looked a bit more sort of purposeful in the second half, and when they got the equaliser, then they just sort of kicked off. I think one newspaper I read today sort of said that it's a sign that although Arsenal are much improved even in the first few games this season, they still have a lot to learn in terms of how to retain that self-confidence when things aren't going well, which United have got, clearly, having won the title so many times in recent years, that they, even when things are going badly in a match, they can still just kind of keep pressing, they'll just plug away and they'll get something, which Arsenal aren't quite, they've perhaps lost that, because it being so many years since they've sort of picked up any silverware. Sorry, Graham, if you happen to be listening back to this. So there is, I think, something to be said for that. But and as for Wenger being sort of sent off about 6 yards into the crowd, I thought that was pretty good.
That was class. I thought that was good, because I thought that the reaction of the United supporters around him was suitably generous towards him, because you detected whether or not they could sense his exasperation and perhaps sort of like had a degree of sympathy for him, because he was standing there like saying, look, I've had a really bad week. I'm really, really fed up with being pushed around by small-minded people, and, you know, I'm going to stand here and you're going to have to move me.
Yeah, and you expect me to walk all the way down to the corner of the bloody stadium. Yeah.
It was great. I mean, it should be worth, I mean, for those that haven't heard, Keith Hackett has apologised and said that the sending off was inappropriate for the context, and rightly so as well. I mean, it was the act of a very, very small minded individual to send a player or send a manager off under those circumstances, so close to the end of the game, frankly.
Oh. Must have been, what, 20 seconds or something, wasn't it? I don't know, it was just ridiculous.
It's just not, I mean, it isn't, I mean, as they say in EastEnders, it's not worth it. you know.
And
it only serves to antagonise people further, frankly, particularly supporters. And after the week we've had, you know, this is not a good time to be resorting to unnecessarily antagonistic actions in highly charged football arenas, frankly.
Well said, that man.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So the second leg of our Night of the Big Ones was the Bundesliga encounter between Bayern Munich and Wolfsburg.
Which was the game I saw, yes.
There's a stroke of luck.
Just as well, isn't it? Yeah, did you see any of it, Chris?
I've only really seen the goals, that's it. If I'm perfectly honest with you, so I suspect this will be where you get to wax lyrical.
I'll talk a little bit about it then.
Well, Bayern were looking for their first win of the season, of course, and if I remember rightly, Wolfsburg were trying to bounce back from their first defeat.
Yes.
Well, so do tell us how it all panned out.
Both teams were trying to bounce back from their first defeat. Although Bayern hadn't won, they hadn't lost until last Saturday, and they lost rather embarrassingly away at Mainz, newly promoted Mainz.
Uh-huh.
So they were back in the Allianz Arena looking for a performance, and Wolfsburg had just been beaten... nay, thrashed by Hamburg the week before at home, and so this was a game where the pressure was on both sides, and it was a fairly even contest throughout the first half. Although the goal, you'd have to say that it was poor defence for Gomez's opening goal, but you could certainly see Wolfsburg getting themselves back into the game. Until the second half started and Robin was brought on. Was brought in only the day before and I think was widely expected not to feature. In fact, I put on my preview that he wouldn't feature, and he did. And my goodness, did he feature. He scored two goals. Van Gaal played him down the middle as opposed to on the flanks, which is where you're used to seeing him. And then when Ribéry came on, and Ribéry's been injured, so he came on later on in the second half, and the pair of them combined with utterly devastating effect.
Really?
And yes, and caught Wolfsburg pretty much cold on the break. Wolfsburg were obviously obliged to go forward and try and get something from the game. And rightly so, as champions, they should go ahead and try and win the game. But Ribéry and Robin looked... utterly devastating, and the acronyms are already going around at the moment. ESPN called them the two R's. Rib and Rob is the other one. Rib and Rob.
Rib and Rob. That's a bit more like it.
Yeah, but I'm going with R and R. But it neither restful nor recuperative for the opposition defences. I can tell you, absolute. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's worth bearing in mind that these were goals scored on the break, and with a team committed to going forward, Bayern aren't going to have those kind of necessarily going to have those kind of days. But they were again. It was against the champions, and my goodness, they did combine beautifully. The other guy worth pointing out is Timochuk, the screening midfielder, signed
the Ukrainian.
Signed from Zenit. For Bayern, and he was in charge for large portions of the game and really took the sting out of Wolfsburg's attacks. Once Wolfsburg got past Bayern's defensive problems that I illustrated on another podcast, were there for all to see. They changed the goalkeeper and put Hans-Georg Butt in, but they've got severe defensive problems, particularly with dealing with width and set pieces. However, this guy Timochuk, he really did. He had a good number on everyone. Good screening midfielder, great passer of the ball, you know, from deep in his own half, and a real player, and a real player. And while I'm not going to revise my initial thoughts about Bayern in the Champions League, I think they'll do poorly. They may not even get out of their group. But in the Bundesliga, they have more than enough firepower, I think, to definitely challenge for the Bundesliga title, if not necessarily win it. But it was 3-0 was the final score, and a stellar return for Arjen Robben. Well, stellar debut for Arjen Robben, and a cracking game.
And of course, the partnership sort of bodes well for the future. It looks like they may have sort of struck gold in terms of getting a good combination with those two. And so Bayern are up to eighth now, just behind Wolfsburg in the table.
That's right.
It's a bit more like it for Bayern. And
Hamburger top with Leverkusen.
Indeed. And in fact, mentioning Leverkusen there, they are playing Wolfsburg next, I think. In that Wolfsburg are next at home to Leverkusen, and Leverkusen are second in the table. Mm. So that's not an easy one for Wolfsburg.
Yeah, Wolfsburg looking could really do with the Cologne to beat 3-1 and rediscover their feet. But no, that's the heavy fixtures just keep coming for Wolfsburg. Again, they might be looking at a bit of a dim spell. They will definitely be challenging at the end of the season. There's no question about that in my mind. But yes, it's all shaping up very nicely for an exciting Bundesliga season, as I have said before.
Good. Oh, and of course, Wolfsburg and Bayern are in European competition this week as well. And Wolfsburg have got CSKA Moscow, which, as you say, is probably the last. That'll be next. Next week, 12th. September 12th.
12th, that'll be. Yeah.
That'll be the week after, I suppose.
So it's the week after.
Yes,
next week's international
games.
Yes.
Yes, of course. Right, that's got that sorted out.
Which is great, because we can have a big international discussion on Monday Sound of Football, because we'll be right in the thick of the international qualifiers.
Yes, we'll be giving you the runners and riders and who needs to do what.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Argentina-Brazil game as well, which will have been taking place on the Saturday, so that'll be very exciting.
Can you believe it's just like only about, 3 months now till the draw is made for the finals?
Let's hope England can get there, eh?
Oh, I think given the fact that your man Modric is now kind of out of the equation for a while, that should help England's cause somewhat.
Indeed, hooray for Modric and his broken leg.
but it's not broken. It's just a bone is broken.
So he's
in
just
his
in
leg.
Pain then, is he?
I know, it's just it was kind of odd really. When news came out that he'd been injured in Tottenham's match at the weekend, they said he'd broken his leg. Tottenham aren't going to comment on how long he's going to be out of the game. I was thinking, will it be 6 months, 7 months, maybe less? Let's go push the boat out and we'll say a year. And then, of course, it turns out that actually it's just a small bone in his leg somewhere. It's not the main. It's not like a kind of Eduardo, ironically, job. It's just like a minor thing. And it's just, I think they're saying 7 weeks.
Oh, you can run it off then.
Oh, I should think so. I've had worse injuries getting out of the bath, I think. Anyways.
Moving on.
There we are, moving on swiftly. So that was the second leg of the Night of the Big Ones. And then the third leg of this momentous trio of football games was the match between Milan and Inter. It's the second week of the new Serie A season. Turned out to be a walk in the park for Mourinho's men, wasn't it, Terry? 4-0 to Inter. And Leonardo's position as Milan boss looks to be rather weaker than it was. Did you see any of this, Terry?
I saw the whole game. As a Milan sympathiser, I looked on with no shortage of horror as well at it. It was how many times have we seen, you know, when a team's about to get hammering, they have this, I don't know whether you've ever noticed this, but when a team's about to get really mullered badly, they have this initial 10-minute period where they play quite well. And then suddenly the opposition just hit a gear.
Yeah.
And then just steamroller them. I don't know whether it is a phenomenon that I've encountered. Certainly as a Palace supporter, I've seen it more times than I'd like. And I can't believe that you haven't seen it as a West Ham supporter.
Oh,
I've
certainly seen it as a West Ham fan.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember some really, really unpleasant encounters with Arsenal where we would look, you know, maybe even score in the first 10 minutes and then lose 4-1. This was like that, only much of their problems were of their own making. I mean, did you see any of it yourself?
Again, only really kind of highlights, but
I'll be brief. But it was all down to Gattuso's injury.
He was off, wasn't he?
He pulled up. He was clearly injured. They took him off. They strapped him up. Sent him back out there. He obviously wasn't fit. And for the penalty goal, which was the second goal, I believe. Gattuso was the only man anywhere near Eto'o going into the box where the Milan defence were precisely, nobody knows. So the only guy there was actually the injured guy, and he did basically all he could, and that was to stop Eto'o by foul means. He didn't even bat an eyelid. He collected his yellow card and just huffed off to the centre circle, wondering whether or not he should be there. Within minutes, he was walking towards the touchline, saying, "Look, I'm done." I'm injured, I shouldn't be playing, or something along those lines, obviously in Italian, possibly with a few more expletives thrown in. And they weren't ready with a substitute. And they were getting Clarence warmed up, and
cross-eyed lion.
Yeah, he wasn't ready. He was still getting his pads on. So I mean, and so what they did was Seydorf, not the not cross-eyed lion. Clarence Seydorf is not a cross-eyed lion.
Cross-eyed lion. I'd just like to point that out.
Let's just make that clear. And anyway, so he had to go out there, and then his tackle. On, and I can't remember who the player's name is, but he committed a tackle, and it was a bad one, and it was a yellow card, and he was gone. So before that, Clarence was standing on the touchline waiting for the ball to go out of play. Now, and then, you know, obviously he had to then turn around. I think he did eventually make it on, but he obviously Gattuso had been sent off by that point. And it was a disaster. And you have to say, poor management from the touchline.
Yeah.
I mean, if a player is unfit, even if you're hoping for them to play through at least till half time and so you can assess the situation, you really should have somebody waiting, ready, warmed up and ready to go in the event that something happens.
You've got to listen to what the player's saying. If he's just really done, then he's...
Yeah, I mean, you do, just as a precaution. I mean, how many times do we see it in games? You see, I mean, someone's hobbling around a bit, he's not looking too happy, and suddenly the bench is up and they're off and they're all warming up and they're all getting ready, because you never know. And that's those are basic coaching skills. Online, sort of like, you know, but, you know, touchline, I should say, touchline management basics. And Leonardo was guilty, I'm afraid, of making a schoolboy error. He hasn't got a coaching badge, because he won the World Cup and therefore is exempt. And you look at that and you think, that's the stuff they would probably teach you in coaching school, as to how to, you know, how to manage, you know, your substitutes and how to manage an injury situation.
Well, certainly, yeah.
I think Inter were going to win that game anyway, because they were clearly the better side. And let's talk a bit about Inter. They were superb. Mm-hmm. Eto'o was pretty good. I mean, Wesley Schneider settled in really well. He wasn't spectacular. I mean, there were two Dutchmen making debuts on the night of the big ones, and all right, and Schneider's wasn't as spectacular as Robbins, but I mean, you know, he's going to be really, really good there. But I mean, I think it all really hinged, you know, the severity of the defeat was down to poor management, in my opinion, from Leonardo in not dealing with an injury situation, and then going down to 10 men. But nevertheless, I mean, for any Inter fans listening who didn't see the game, your team were far superior, and would have won that game under, even if Milan had 12, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, all the damage was pretty much done, wasn't it, by half time? I think it was 3-0 up at half time. So it does kind of make a belief a bit. I mean, it's the very nice man syndrome again with Leonardo. And he's sort of, I'm sure a lot of people remember him sort of being a sort of pundit on the BBC during I think it was the last World Cup.
Indeed.
Possibly the one before, or maybe both.
Possibly both, yes.
As you say, World Cup winner and all that. But
a legend and a great player. And and you don't like to speak ill of such great men. Nevertheless, Dick Advocaat is out of work at the moment. And I think would be a perfect manager for a club like AC Milan. He has all the pedigree and the experience.
And, will you be representing him in any future discussions?
Well, for some reason, Berlusconi is not picking up his voicemails and hasn't and isn't replying to my numerous texts to him on the subject of Milan's next manager. And but I'm hoping that he does listen to this podcast, and then, you know, the message will get through. In fact, hopefully his media set company will buy this podcast, and then we can live like millionaires.
Yeah, I have a feeling if we go back through the back catalogue of Onion Bag articles, there's probably something we've said about him in there which has pretty much kind of blown a hole in the whole plan, really. But that's just a guess on my part, or even some people on the pitch, who knows. There it is. Milan, they had an uneasy start, of course, in the first week of the season, so they'd be pretty much glad to get that one out of the way. And so after a couple of games, it's Inter up to fifth now in the table. Milan languishing in 11th, just inside the bottom half.
Ludicrously early days, though. That's only two games in for the Serie A, isn't it?
Absolutely, and next up it will be Milan away to Livorno, which I suspect may be somewhat less of a challenge for them. And for Inter, they are at home to Parma next time around. So,
well, that's an easy 3 points for Inter. And
Parma have started quite well.
Livorno away, big pressure there. Absolutely must win that game, Milan, or there'll be big trouble. There will be trouble.
There may be trouble ahead, as the man once said. So that's pretty much it as far as the kind of the big three games concerned. Have you caught any of the Crystal Palace match earlier on this evening, Terry?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean it was
1-1, wasn't it?
It was 1-1 at Peterborough, which I think tells you everything that you need to know about Crystal Palace. So let's either move on to a more interesting subject or finish the podcast off.
Oh, I think we should probably pretty much leave it there, really, because we've got no Graham, and we've dealt with all the important stuff, and we're not gonna bore you. We're just gonna kind of talk about what we have to talk about and get out of here.
Get out of here.
Yeah, leave a bad smell in the room. Well, I'm not anyway. don't forget, you can now download this here podcast via iTunes, should you wish to do so. Or you can just go to the Sound of Football blog site, which is soundoffootball.blogspot.com. Or if you're really clueless, then you may just want to go to Some People on the Pitch and follow all the shortcuts from there.
Or just ask someone on Twitter. It'll
yes,
someone else will know.
We're just sort of everywhere now, really, including Twitter. He lied. well, that's about it, really, for episode 4 of The Sound of Football. But remember, if you want to get in touch with us or comment on any of the subjects we've talked about, feel free to drop us a line. The email address is sofpodcast@googlemail.com. And if there's anything you want us to talk about, or if you have a suggestion for the show, drop us a line. We'll try and do our best. Failing that, of course, we are on Twitter. The three of us are contactable individually, should you wish to... send us your abuse. It's @ChrisOakley or @GrahamSibley or @RedDuffman. Or indeed, there are Twitter accounts for our specific websites. That's @SPAOTP and @OnionBag. However, we shall trouble you no more. That is about it for the end of show number 4. Hope you've enjoyed it. Join us again next week when we'll be talking all about the international matches coming up. But for the time being, from Terry and myself, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.
Goodbye.